Peace. Welcome to High and Wide Radio, episode 46 of season 4. My name is Jim Iacovone, and I'm joined by the one and only Jack Smith. Before we get to our topics of the episode, allow me to remind you, if you're not listening live, please make sure to subscribe and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Spreaker. And we also want to shout out our affiliate sites, fullpresscoverage.com and The Painted Lines. While you're listening to the episode, check out our site, hwhockey.net, where you can now find the Pod Street Bully podcast and the Time I Skates podcast. Those guys do great stuff over there. So if you're not already and you haven't yet, give them a follow on Twitter and give their podcast, give their show a listen. Those guys, they're putting in work as well. They're doing great things over there, trying to make the best of what's been so far. Not a great summer, Jack, right? As far as the aggressive retool goes, right?
I officially don't know what that means anymore. Either word. To put it politely, underwhelming would be the nicest way to put it, to say the least.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect way to say it. You're being very nice to say it's underwhelming. We talked a lot about this last week in the what the hell is it called? The Twitter space, that we were just straight up lied to, basically. At least that's how the majority of fans feel. They feel like they were lied to. And do you think that that's, is that correct, Jack? Do you think that we were lied to, or do you think Chuck Fletcher just has a totally different idea of what an aggressive retool is?
Well, if he has a different idea, I don't know why he didn't let us in on it back in, what was it, January, February, when he told us what it was, and coupled with the blank check, coupled with the high-end talent. These are all words that he used. Blank check with Dave Scott, but everything else was Chuck Fletcher. And when it refers to the fifth overall pick, not that I don't like Cutter. Cutter's my man, but we're all looking for a certain type of player. It was clearly DeBrincat, and he says one thing and does another. I don't know if you asked me, that's lying. Oh, and then there's the whole Johnny Gaudreau thing, how they were never in on him. They couldn't move JVR, therefore they were out on him. They were in on him. His job was too hard, therefore they were out on him. But to say they were never in on him, that's a lie. It's a bold-faced lie. We've been given nothing but lies this offseason. I understand if you try and you fail. I think all of Philadelphia would, like, they wouldn't give him a pass, but they'd be more understanding, It would be more understanding to that. But the fact that he came out almost arrogantly with Charlie's questioning and was like, it's a retool, Charlie. It's a bill of goods, not a bag of goods. I said bag of goods last week. It's a bill of goods we were sold. Oh, I don't know why you would think that. And, you know, and what we got in free agency. And, yeah, I mean, there's no other way to look at it as in we were lied to. And he won't tell us the reason why, whether he failed or what. But we were lied to. And when you look at the roster now, it's scary. It's wow, we are clearly in the Connor Bedard beat sweepstakes.
I mean, so on that side of it, not necessarily a bad thing, right? I mean, so for me, if the Flyers just so happen to be in this Connor Bedard potential situation, I'm not going to be angry at that.
I agree.
On the other side, you know, fans and people who are in your camp with, you know, a rebuild, you know, they want to lose as many games as possible to potentially get the high-end talent in the draft. I mean, yeah, should you be excited a little bit about that potentially?
So what I worry is they'll just finish, like, I don't know, seventh to last or something like that, because I think they'll be healthier. And I just feel like the one thing I feel strongly about is they are probably the worst team in their division. Look at all the other teams. Most of them improved. Not all of them, but most of them improved. You're going to probably see Ottawa a little bit more. They look a lot better. I can't think of very many teams on the East Coast that got worse. I know some teams were a little inactive, but they're still good teams. Like the Devils added. The Rangers added a – I like that deal for Vetrano. I'm sorry, not Vetrano.
Trocheck.
Trocheck, thank you. You know, they needed a center. I like him better than Ryan Strome. I like that deal. And who knows what else they're going to add along the way. It seems like the West has taken some hits, particularly Calgary. Well, that doesn't really affect us over here. So, I mean, the Islanders are kind of didn't do much, but they have a track record of success. I know they're without Trotz, but we don't. So I would think that they turn things around before we do. And it was dawning on me, like, we have another year here with Carter Hart. The defense hasn't been improved. You're probably going to be without Ryan Ellis the entire season. They added Tony D'Angelo, which does nothing for Hart defensively. And who is the backup goalie to spell him when he needs a break?
I guess it's going to be between Felix Sandstrom and Troy Grosnick.
Three NHL games to his name.
Yeah, that was a little bit odd, wasn't it?
Odd, again, very nice way to describe it.
I mean, it's just like you just have no idea what they're going to do.
Here's the thing. So I was just going to say, how does that move tell you they're trying to do anything, trying to do any winning this year? Because it doesn't. It's a disservice for the team and his starting goalie. But we were told in his press conference after he duped everybody that it's a stabilization year. Okay. Yeah. So if that's the case, why did you get rid of Lindblom? Like, really? Was that really necessary at that point then? With no big move to follow and it's a stabilization year. Sure, we save money this year, but we get hit with a little bit of a cap hit following. Oh, and we lost Oscar Lindblom and it looks really bad. And the guy gets scooped up immediately for a half a million short of what he was making. Like, it just, I don't know. It's such a head scratcher, and every moves and what he says just don't match up. They don't match up at all. So there's no point in talking to the guy because he's going to do whatever the hell he feels like that day for whoever person's telling him information he likes that day. They're just on a runaway train. Nothing's going right. The entire fan base, especially on Twitter, is uniting against them, which is so rare. And but that tells you how bad things are. When things get this bad and everybody universally can be like, what the hell are you doing? You really have no direction. Nobody can try to like back you in any way. That's scary. That's scary. You're going to be in limbo. I mean, there's purgatory and then there's limbo. I don't know what's worse. At least purgatory might have some kind of plan. Limbo is just, we don't know what the hell's going on. We're not sure. We're going to wait this out. You're going to wait out seasons? My son is going to be 16 months in a few days, right? I want him to be a diehard Flyers fan. What do I have to show him that I'm not crazy and he's the smart one? Mind you, he's, you know, going to be one and a half. Like, come on.
He's going to grow up and be like, Dad, what the hell's the matter with you? Like, you got me into this? I'm addicted to this? Like, come on.
He goes, you're sick.
Yeah, that's what he's going to tell you. He's like, dude, you got issues, man. No wonder why. There was something I was going to say in there. So when Flyers fans unite, like it is kind of funny on there because like the analytic crowd is not like pushing the analytic stuff anymore. Like the eye test crowd or the old school guys aren't pushing their, you know, stuff anymore. It's everyone kind of dropped their issue with the team, you know, whatever kind of style they wanted it to be. And everyone's just throwing up their arms. Like, what the actual hell is happening? What is going on? Right. Like, even if they were to build an analytics-based team, at least you knew what they were doing. You know what I'm saying, Jack? Or, you know, if they were, going out and just spending the most money on whatever players, you would say, okay, well, aggressive retool, right? And right now it's like aggressive retool. I mean, we talked about it a little bit. What is that? Aggressive retool, I mean, with this roster, I mean, you have a guy from the area, right? Grew up a Flyers fan. Wanted to play for the team, and they didn't have the cap space. A week before the draft, the pre-draft press conference, Fletcher did make a comment. He said, we are cap compliant. He said the cap will not be an issue, right? And whether he had things lined up or not, you know, the following couple weeks proved that to be not true. It was an issue. And if there's anybody holding Chuck Fletcher accountable, that's something I'm bringing up, right? You told us that the cap wasn't going to be a problem. When it came down to it, it was the biggest possible. It couldn't have been more of a problem. You missed out on Johnny Gaudreau. And, you know, there are people out there who go that'll say, you know, Gaudreau would not have fixed this team. You're not bringing in Gaudreau to fix this team by himself. Right. I think we were talking about it in the group chat today. I think it was Paul who said it. You bring in a guy like Gaudreau that can distribute the puck and play the way he does, you know, all of a sudden a guy that, you know, can potentially score 40, 50 goals. I don't know. I don't know who that guy is. All of a sudden, maybe he wants to come to Philly because he knows he's going to be playing with a guy like Johnny Gaudreau, right? He makes Philadelphia attractive to play for. It's not just about acquiring the one player. It's about, okay, what happens next? What happens after? You look at the Philadelphia Flyers roster right now, who in their right mind would want to play here? If they're a goal scorer, right? Who's going to sign here and say, yeah, I'm going to play here because I'm going to score 35, 40 goals because I got such and such passing me pucks. You know what I mean? You know, they're going to have to make trades. And the problem with that is Chuck Fletcher's the guy making the deals. And I think at this point, we've all kind of lost our faith in Fletcher. I was kind of, you know, hanging on there. Not that I felt bad for the guy, but was giving him the benefit of the doubt. And this offseason, at least to me, I'm sure everybody else, has just been a disaster. It hasn't been what it needed to be or what they said it was going to be. And I don't think Dave Scott did him any favors, by the way. If you go back and remember, you know, oh, Chuck's going to have a blank check. Dude, right then, he was kind of hanging him out to dry because now we all expected they're going to be spending. They're going to be moving and shaking. They're going to be doing stuff. If they're going to be spending money on the roster, what does that mean? They're up against the cap. What does that mean? It means guys are going to have to get moved. Chuck Fletcher didn't do that.
Here's my thing, and here's what doesn't make sense to me. A lot of people are like against the, oh, well, Gaudreau wouldn't have fixed this, wouldn't have fixed that. So going into last year, did we not think this team could compete? Because I think most people thought.
Yeah, for sure.
I understand the whole Ryan Ellis thing and losing Giroux. So if we are gonna blame this on injuries, which it seems to be the thing, why wouldn't you want to add to your team that you think is good? Not to mention you good have point. To replace Giroux's points. So if you are trying to win stabilization a year or not, losing JVR, gaining Johnny Hockey is a massive upgrade to a team that you built and said is ready to win and compete. You're only missing Giroux, which you just replaced with with Johnny Gaudreau. JVR is a non, it doesn't mean anything. It's only extra $2 million in the pot or three or whatever, depending on how you break it down. And then what? Like, if Ellis plays, you should theoretically be a playoff contender, if not more, based on the team last year, the things being said last year. So why this whole pump the brakes, Gaudreau's not worth it crowd? I don't think there's many of them. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me based on where the team was last year and the things that were said last year. Then you lose G. You lose, you know, so like I don't understand where that point production is coming from now. Are we literally just taking this year off? Was that the decision?
It sort of seems that way.
And don't get me started on the contract. I like the player for what he does. Although analytically, he could be the worst player in the NHL. I know analytics takes intangibles and throws them out the window, but still, there is something to be said about being the worst. And he gets a four-year deal when he's 31 yeah. years old, and you got a lot of young kids coming up. That just seems odd. Not to mention you have Zach McKeown, who does the same exact job. Maybe Delory does better. I'm sure he does. But like, why is that such an emphasis right now? Why is that worth buying out Oscar Lindblom, who did come back from cancer, who if you're in a stabilization year and you want to see what everybody has, this guy who's coming back from a very serious thing, maybe it took him a little bit longer than expected. You just outright buy him out. I mean, a lot of pieces just don't make a lot of sense. I don't understand. And I struggle to find a direction of this team and people try to defend it. And I see so many holes in every single argument, not that there are many of them, that I see. And now on top of that, the organization, which can't take any more hits, whether it's on the ice, off the ice, or what they're telling us, they can't afford any more hits, is now bold-faced lying to us at an embarrassing offseason. And what are we left with? What are we supposed to look forward to? How are we going to put asses in seats? If I'm Dave Scott, I'm livid. How could you let this slide?
There's no way they're expecting people to buy tickets next year. There can't be a way. Right. I mean, unless they're really going to push the milkshakes again, I don't know. But real quick, I do want to just say on Lindblom, I had heard, and I don't know if you remember, a couple months back, I had mentioned that he could possibly get bought out. I got a buddy. I don't know if he wants me to say his name on the show. Had a weird text message one day and sends the text, and the text was, Flyers are shopping Lindblom. Nobody wants him. Thinking about buying him out. This was back in, I can't remember now, maybe May, I think. And, you know, I was kind of like, ah, okay, you know, like, it's early. They can get something for Lindblom, right? Like a fifth, at least, sixth, something. And then it happened. They bought him out. So if that was true, they were shopping him and just nobody wanted to pony up. I mean, teams knew that the Flyers were screwed with the cap. And they weren't going to trade anything for somebody that they could possibly get for free. Or, you know, with JVR, I mean, who wants to take on $7 million? You know, you're going to try to get that 2023 first round pick, right? Like, and in a way, so like, don't get me wrong. This is not me giving any kudos to Chuck Fletcher because he failed miserably, but I'm glad that he didn't trade that 2023 pick with JVR. I'm glad JVR, I mean, if worst case scenario, I'm glad JVR is still on the team, because you have to think come trade deadline, you have to think they get at least something for him, at least like a 5-6-4.
Yeah. So yeah. where I agree with you is I'm glad he didn't give the 2023 up either. But when it comes to Lindblom, I guess my thing there is you couldn't trade him. When they moved him, I didn't love it, but I was like, this is part one of a bigger move. And there was no bigger move. And it's kind of like,
but they brought in Braun.
Point of that?
Come on.
What the hell was the point of that? Like, you brought in DeLaurier and Braun? Like, that's hysterical.
Put some respect on Braun's name.
Listen, of all time, Bobby Orr bends, he bows to him. I get it.
He bends the knee to Braun, yeah.
He bends the knee, exactly. But, like, that's why you got rid of Lindblom at this time?
Yeah, underwhelming.
It just screamed. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, I'd rather, if it's stabilization year, then keep them. Don't worry about the cap hit later. It's you know, because it's going to, not this year, but we're not doing anything this year. We didn't do anything with buying him out except for Ad DeLaurier for 4 years. If you assign him that long, you're spreading that cap thin so it's not as bad. So what was the point? Bring back Braun? I'd have played hardball with Braun. And I'm sure we came back for cheaper than 1.8. if you really needed him to, like, it just blows my mind. I don't understand it. And nothing, a lot of what they did leading up to free agency and then what actually happened at free agency doesn't make sense. If you want to make an argument about JVR in the 2023 first, okay, I get that. But why hasn't there been like another mega move? Why isn't like a Konechny been moved, or God forbid a Provorov? If it's a stabilization year, this is the time you can make that big trade move or whatever and figure it out for next year, because you have an entire season. You'll lose JVR's cap hit. You'll lose whoever's cap hit that you trade away and whatnot. Like, where are these like creative trades that pretty much every other GM does? Think about Chicago after they signed Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane to those $10.5 million deals. Bowman had to get really creative with bringing guys in and trading them out. Brings in Panarin, has to trade him away. Brings back Brandon Saad and whatnot. You know, trades this guy, trades that guy, brings this guy. He got creative. He did the best he could with what he had, considering those huge contracts he had. He was making trades daily. Fletcher has done nothing, nothing. He's buying guys out, signing fourth line guys, third pairing guys, of AHL at best backup goalie, and saying it's a stabilization year. Anytime he does a trade and nobody likes a trade, he goes, well, there was competition. That's your first notion that he lost the trade. Can you think of one trade the man won? I can think of one, but after that, there's a reason why he won it. And to me, that
it's probably the same one.
Gudas for Niskanen.
Oh, and I was going to say the Ellis trade.
Well, no, we know the reason.
No, I can't even say that.
So Gudas for Niskanen, I would say, was a win because Niskanen was clearly better. But for Washington, it was 100% a cap thing. It was before COVID. It was before the flat cap. So I'll give it to him. He took a team that was had cap issues, and he took advantage of that. I like that trade. You look at Ellis. Well, yes.
Here's the thing. You could actually, I mean, depend like based on what the team needs today, and, you know, Niskanen played a year. Is there an argument now that Fletcher lost that trade? Because you look at Gudas' game.
I hate on him enough. So for me to blame him for the COVID, and I think COVID's why Niskanen retired, that's hard to put on him.
All right, okay. I'll take that. You're giving him a little bit of a break there.
If COVID never happens, I think Niskanen not only plays again, he might resign for another deal that's a little bit cheaper. You know, there is no Risto trade. Like, maybe there is. I don't know. But I'm just saying, I think things would have been better. COVID did nobody any favors.
It's just interesting when you think about it, you know, how they moved out Gudas for Niskanen. And, you know, there's sort of a little bit of a domino effect there. Like, I just thinking about this now, this is not something that I've thought about earlier. But, you know, they move a guy like Gudas, who's known for his physicality and, you know, he's got a little bite to his game. Probably a third at best, second pair guy, right? And, you know, what are they doing the last 2 years, right? Who do they go out and trade for? Rasmus Ristolainen, because they're missing a Gudas type guy. So they replace him with Ristolainen and sign him to a $5 million deal, right? And I would argue if Ristolainen and Gudas were to fight, Gudas would dominate him. Ristolainen might be a tough customer. I'm not sure if he is. Never seen him drop the gloves. Certainly plays tough. Is he, though? I don't know. It's just interesting because they traded a guy like Gudas, and now they're seemingly searching for that same kind of energy. They bring in Delorier, you know, let Lindblom go. It's just it's interesting, you know, thinking about that deal now.
Well, here's the problem with how it's been done with Fletcher. So guys like Gudas, Risto, you know, they typically, in Gudas' case, you know, they're your third-pairing defensemen who do that. Fletcher has him as a second-pairing defenseman, paying him over $5 million.
Yeah.
I can make the same argument for Anthony DeAngelo. Second, third-pairing defenseman, you kind of shelter his 5-on-5 playing time because you're worried about him in your own end. You use him on a power play. Not exactly a guy that – yeah, do I like that we have him? Sure. But $5 million, it's like kind of takes a shine away from what you're trying to get out of that guy because now you're forced to
use money right there
in the lineup. And he's going to be on this stupid team. He's going to be playing with Provorov in the first pair. Let's see how long that lasts. We'll take bets on that one, you know? So, like, when these guys are making $5 million a piece, when they technically would be great as a third pairing defense, making $2.5 million, $3 million, $3.5 million at most each, they're forced higher in your lineup, take up more of your cap percentage, and then you have less to go around for the rest of the team. And then at the end of the day, you're just not good enough. You went out and overpaid for these guys that give you something you need, but they're not an overall good hockey player, and that it's going to bite you in the ass. And that's exactly what's going to happen this year.
Yeah, for sure. So stabilization year next year, I think, you know, that's what we're all looking.
Defibrillators out, I guess.
Yeah, like, I guess because the last 2 years have been so bad, right? Someone attempted to, maybe plan B was, hey, if we can't get Gaudreau, let's take a step back. You know, it's Tortorella's first year of four, right? Even, you know, Tort said playoffs aren't. He didn't not say that they were a goal, but he didn't talk about playoffs. He didn't say, yeah, we need to make playoffs. He didn't put any pressure on like that. So a stabilization year, what does that mean? To the Flyers, it means, you know, some of these RFAs, some of these draft picks they drafted 5-6 years ago, Morgan Frost, Isaac Ratcliffe, guys like Wade Allison, those type of player, Tanner Lozinski, they're going to get some playing time this year. And I guess that's okay, right? So now, Jack, like we have to kind of change what our expectations are for next year, which really sucks because I know for myself, I was looking forward to having fun again. But we're going to be watching the kids. We're going to be seeing what, you know, guys that were drafted 4, 5, 6 years ago, what they can actually do in the NHL, because we haven't seen anything from them yet. And I would imagine they move on from a lot of these guys after this year. Just my hunch. You know, I would like for Morgan Frost to somehow break out. And I don't know, what's a breakout year for Morgan Frost? 40, 50 points, Jack?
I'll take 40. If he plays the full year and he stays healthy, I'll take it. I won't love it, but I'll take it. He signed a prove-it deal. That's a prove-it deal. For where he's at, he just – and a lot of these guys, especially Allison, they just got to stay healthy. Just prove you can stay healthy, please. You can miss a couple of games here and there, maintenance day here and there, but you can't be missing months and months and months. Like, you got to stay healthy. You got to be there every day and show that your body can hold up over an NHL regular season schedule. Otherwise, you're just one of those guys who could have been, but it is what it is. You know, it's unfortunate.
Yeah. So I guess we're going to be watching a lot of stabilizing next season with another year Couturier gone, another year Hayes gone. Provorov not getting up there, but he's definitely not getting younger. Travis Sanheim's on the last year of his deal.
Well, that'd be fun. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, he's supposed to be up for another big payday. You know, is he going to get it? What does he get? Does he get over 5.5? Provorov's making over 6. You would assume he gets more than Risto. but, yeah, I mean, we will see what happens with the defense. It's really, for me, it's the forwards, right? Like, you have a, let's be a little bit realistic here. You look at the defense corps and it's like, they have guys, they have players, right? And we were kind of questioning, okay, can Sanheim play with Ristolainen? And will that be a pairing? It was last year. They were fine, right? Like, they were okay. Like, more times than not, we didn't even notice them together than like, it wasn't a negative thing, right? Like, it wasn't like, you got to break these guys up, why they re-sign Risto kind of thing, right? We're all angry at him re-signing Risto because they wanted him to, you know, get more assets and move cap space. But realistically, Sanheim-Risto was a perfectly okay pairing, right? Go back to York and Braun. It's a perfectly fine third pairing. We know that they can play together. Cam York, former first round pick, he's going to grow into a decent player. He looked good on the power play last year. Justin Braun is the embodiment of a stabilizer, in my opinion, for a young player. It's really the top pair. You know, what are we going to get from Ivan Provorov? We know Tony DeAngelo was a 60-point, defenseman last year. Are they going to mesh? Can they play together? We know that Provorov had some of his best seasons playing alongside Shane Gostisbehere. Can they replicate it playing with Tony D? We'll find out. I'm not really worried about the defense. It's the forward group again that has the question marks, right? And it's Farabee's going to miss a couple weeks of the season. I don't think he's going to be out as long as we were told. I think they're doing the training staff a little bit of a favor with that, just in case there's a setback or something. So they don't say that he's going to come back late October, early November. And ends up being held out till late November, December kind of thing. The forward group needs help. There's no creativity in the forward group. It's very vanilla, right? They're not fun to watch. And, you know, when you don't have a creative roster, I think a coach like John Tortorella will help out a lot with that, because he's going to have you play in a certain way, right? You're going to be busting your ass. Forget about the creativity. Right, a guy like Torts doesn't necessarily need creative players to play his style of hockey. Which, hey, I'm not saying the Flyers are going to make the playoffs or anything. I don't know if this is good or bad. I don't think they're going to be a bottom five team. And I'm kind of getting away from the stabilization thing here, but you brought up earlier the teams in the East, Jack, and this is where they absolutely could be a bottom five team. Every team just in the Metro is probably better. Even the Devils got a little bit better. They went out and got Palat. They drafted that Nemec kid. Did they get somebody else in free agency that I missed? Or they made a trade, right, for Marino?
Yeah.
The Devils?
Marino's solid, man. He's solid.
So they made moves. They improved, we'll say. And I think the Flyers struggled with New Jersey last year or the year before. They
struggled with everybody, Jim.
Columbus gets Gaudreau. Obviously,
sure. That guy.
So, yeah. So,
so Jim, real quick, you said you don't think they're going to be would you say bottom three or bottom five?
Bottom five.
All right. I'm going to read you their – this is, I want to thank Dan Silver. He does a great job with this stuff. I'm going to read to you what their current lineup looks like, okay? Yes. And obviously, a couple of guys are interchangeable. But as of right now, their top line – I want you to compare this with top lines across the league. Across the league.
This
right?
is going to be bad, man.
Sean Couturier centering James Van Riemsdyk and Travis Konecny. Kevin Hayes centering Scotty Laughton and Cam Atkinson. Morgan Frost centering Owen Tippett and Noah Cates. Patrick Brown centering Zach McEwen. We'll see. Probably maybe Wade Allison. You know, slash one of the two. DeLaurier. And then Tanner Lozinski's hanging around. Maybe they're if they sign McEwen, you have two extras forwards there. That forward group is horrendous. Horrendous. You have a second line as your first line. And there's a winger there. And I won't say any names. But he is the streakiest motherfucker that we've ever seen, and that's going to really – and he's on your top hit line. This will obviously be changed throughout the year, no doubt. Your second pairing, I like Hayes and Atkinson, and I like Laughton, but, like, for a production line, I want more skill there, more talent. You know, that's a little – hopefully Hayes comes back strong. But even then, we're already hoping for things. You got two second lines. One of which you could argue is a little bit lower, almost third line-ish. Then you got Morgan Frost, who's a complete question mark. Owen Tippett, who we just got. Noah Cates, who's just come up. And then you got Patrick Brown, who I was not the biggest fan of. McEwen and DeLaurier, who are the same player. DeLaurier is probably a little bit better. And you mix in Lozinski and Allison at some point. That's bad. There was no superstar, not even close. You got potential goal scorer in Atkinson, and who knows what you get from Konecny. You get a lot of garbage time goals, a lot of end of the season goals from these guys who we always get hyped up about at the end of the year. Oh, well, he played really well. He did really good. And then the actual season starts. And like, oh, what happened? That happens all the time, and nobody ever talks about it. It happens to all these guys. Allison was 2 years ago. Frost, his final, 12 games were real nice. Okay, what a sample size that is. Probably get hurt again. And then on D, you know, you said you're okay with it. Provorov and D'Angelo's a mirror of Provorov and Ghost. At one point, they were quote-unquote elite, but that was a very small sample size. That next season, they fell to pieces. Sanheim, Ristolainen was better for Sanheim. Ristolainen certainly had some struggles. Braun and York, what if Braun loses yet another step? How old is he at this point? You know, York, is he as good as we think he is, or was that another flash in the pan, the garbage time? You know, production, I guess we'll see. Oh, and if somebody gets hurt, you got good old Nick Seeler coming in. What a great signing. Like, I love that these Minnesota guys. This is
yeah, Connaughton too.
And oh yeah, yeah. Bring retread. We keep hearing retool, 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 but all I keep hearing is retread, retread, retread. You got Carter Hart, who's the best player on the team, and Troy Grosnick or Sandstrom, complete mystery. I mean, holy shit, man. That is bad. That is a bad lineup. That is a bad, bad. So unless our coach is going to be a miracle worker, I don't see this team. I'm going to put – if there was a – I'll put money in they don't make the playoffs because it's such an easy bet. Yeah. Now, as far as bottom three, bottom five, I think they're pretty – they're cemented in there. When you look at the division and you look at the conference – Who in the conference is not better than them? There's probably there might be a team or two, but Ottawa could surpass them. I think they will. Toronto, Tampa, Florida—that's easy. Our whole division, which we already talked about. So who am I missing from the other divisions?
Names. I'm bringing it up real quick. Florida, Toronto, Tampa, Boston, Buffalo, yo. Detroit, Ottawa. Yeah, Detroit. Yeah, you could be right. they could finish last,
especially if they bring back Bertuzzi on top of what they've already done. We could be the worst team in the East. That automatically puts you in the top five, probably the top three.
Yeah.
The only team right now taking any heat off the Flyers, no pun intended, is the Flames.
Oh, yeah. They're going to drop big time. It'll be interesting to see what happens there.
You'd think we'd be in on Tkachuk because he checks every box of what this team needs between being harder to play against. He's young. He's talented. I'm sure. I mean, if he said he doesn't want to play here, that's one thing. But, like, I don't even know if Fletcher even made a phone call.
I would assume that it would have to involve the 2023 one for sure, right?
Why can't they make that trade, and it's worth a guy for like Kachuk, make it lottery
protected? Yeah.
Lottery protected 2020. And that's still a good pick. That's still a good pick.
I think if I'm Calgary, though, like I don't want it unless it's a
top
five.
Well, it depends on what else.
You're moving Kachuk, right?
It depends on what else is coming back.
Like, I mean, I would probably.
I haven't seen any trades right now where 2023 was involved. Like that Blues trade, that wasn't a 2023, I don't believe. I think that was something else, wasn't it?
I don't think they put the year on, but that was a funky trade, wasn't it?
But even if it was legit, even if it was, they're making the playoffs. They made the playoffs last year. They lost to Colorado. Like, shit.
The Blues, yeah.
So, like, that they don't have to put that on there because, you know, they're not going to lose that pick. It's not going to be in contention for Bedard. So if the Flyers could make a trade like that, because it's still a very deep draft, and
this is really weird because I feel like I should be on your side with getting Kachuk right now, but I'm kind of not. And I want Kachuk.
Because you want Bedard, but we're not getting
it. Well, because you just knock some sense into me here. I'm like, Jesus Christ, the Flyers really might be the worst team in the league next year.
Well, if they want to go for that, why all this other bullshit? Like, just do it. You know what I mean? Like,
I think that they just don't know the fan base. I think that they just are tone deaf, Jack. I think, you know, they're saying this is going to be a stabilization year was basically them saying we might tank next year, right? Because we didn't add anything.
I could live with that. I could live with that. All we can do is go by what they tell us, and all they told us was blank check, aggressive retool, high end talent. So what are we supposed to think?
Somewhere along the way, they changed their mind.
Do they want us to hate them? These are their words. Should we not listen to a word? Do they even bother doing a presser anymore if they're just going to lie? Like, they told us this. I didn't say, or we didn't say, call a presser now and speak. No, they set this up. They spoke. These are their words. We're using against them. So, like, what are we supposed to think? The Rangers sent a letter. It did wonders. All right, give me a letter. Give me a voicemail. I don't give a shit. Give me a beeper. Like, I just be honest. Right. I don't care. I know your shit. I watch enough of the sport to know how bad you are. So just be honest.
I don't know. I don't know what they're afraid of by saying the word, hey, we're not going for it next year.
None of those.
Right. Like, they can't. How is it possible that they're afraid to lose less money next season? Like, the last season was embarrassing. Like, you can't tell me they had more than 10,000 fans. On any given night. I mean, they always juice up the numbers because of tickets sold, but attendance, there was several occasions where there was under 10,000 fans in that stadium.
One thing that was telling to me was the 50-50 numbers. I remember when Eric Lindros retired, the 50-50 numbers was like, it was almost like 88,000. I know they did that on purpose, but it was like really close, and they probably bumped it up just to make it work. But like, that's a lot of money. I think the one game I saw was like 13,000. Like, that's nothing.
Yeah.
That is nothing.
That is a good indicator. You're right. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know why they would try to hide anything. Like I feel like there is a section of this fan base that would be more encouraged to go to games if you told them, hey, we're tearing it down. We're going to play the kids, right? Because, you know, there's guys out there that would actually enjoy watching, you know, the kids grow or this and that. I'm not one of those guys. But I'm just trying to say there are people that, you know, enjoy watching kids come along and, you know, grow into something, you know? So
I'd be all
right
about
now
that.
They're turning everybody off.
Right. There's nothing for anybody to watch. And I would be fine watching the kids. I'd actually have an interest in JVR because I'd be like, oh, I wonder what I hope he has a good year to see what we can get for him at the deadline. Mm-hmm. You know, like things like that, you know. And
right, for you, because we don't have to pay to see that. Like you know what I mean? But like who's going to pay? I don't know. What's a cheap ticket go for these days?
What's standing room now? Like $30 or something?
Something like that, 20, 30 bucks. I mean, and you consider, okay, if I'm buying standing room, I'm probably gonna, you know, be standing near the what the hell is it called? The concession stand. I'm gonna be loading up on beers, you know what I mean, this and that. You know, by the end of the night, you're spending easily 50, 60 bucks, and Am I doing that to watch, you know, the Flyers get the you know, get it's destroyed?
Not, or, yeah,
right. I don't know.
And, we're going to be tougher to play against. Okay, is our fourth line going to play the whole game? Like, that's I don't understand right. how we're that much tougher to play against if we're just adding one guy.
Right. Right. You need the skill, right? Because where did we see this? I think it was Jordan Hall's article. JVR had said something about Wayne Simmonds. Playing with Wayne Simmonds made it easier for him to play his game because it created space, right? Guys would ease up on JVR. They wouldn't, you know, drill him in the corner, this and that. You could play a little bit more loose with a guy like Wayne Simmonds. I'm assuming, you know, I don't know if Nick Deslauriers is going to create that same space. Obviously, he's one of the toughest guys in the league, but I don't think JVR and Deslauriers are going to be playing on the same line. Sure, teams are going to have to worry about Deslauriers, but you need the skill on the roster is my point, right? Like, I don't think anyone's sitting here expecting JVR to score 30 goals next season, right? You need somebody to pass him the puck, number one. Who's going to be doing that? Giroux's not here anymore. It's going to be Travis Konecny. Yeah, Gaudreau would have been. I mean, so here's the crazy thing.
Gone, but like the point is, Giroux ain't here. Voracek ain't here. Who's that guy? You're going to be forced to play him on your top line to make his contract make sense. At this point, they might as well to juice up his percentages so that he can be traded for something.
Yeah. If that's the direction they're going to go next year, you know, play a lot of the younger guys, see what you got. And, you know, sell off players at the trade deadline. Totally cool with that. If it's like a transition type year or stabilization, I'm okay with that, right? Because they weren't winning a cup next season anyway. If the stabilization year was the pivot, if they didn't get Gaudreau or they couldn't create space for Gaudreau, I'm fine with that. As long as it was planned, right? That's the kind of thing I'm worried about. And you brought it up earlier. As long as it was planned to be, okay, if we strike out on Gaudreau, if we strike out on moving JVR, what's plan B? Well, we can go stabilization year. You know, the draft is pretty loaded next year. Let's go for Bedard or Michkov or what's that Italian kid's name? I can't remember. Let's go for one of those guys. And, you know, we just went over the roster. There aren't many teams that are going to be probably worse, right? Like, I think in the sense – I was looking at their roster and I'm like, you know what? Not terrible. But when you look at Carolina, New York, Pittsburgh, Washington, Islanders, Columbus, New Jersey, they're all going to finish in front of the Flyers. Right?
I got to look at Arizona's first line to see if I like it better than the Flyers' first line.
But they had more wins than they tied for wins. Sorry. They both had 25 apiece. Flyers had four more points. So that's how bad the Flyers were last year.
Yeah. You got a team actively trying to lose versus a team actively trying to win. Yes, I get it. There were injuries, but come on, man. Like, you can't – the things happen. Like, you can't have no contingency plan whatsoever.
And I hope that was the plan.
They don't this year going in. Can you imagine if Carter Hart, like, tore his ACL? Who's the goalie? Like, that would be – oh, my God. They might have to ask somebody to come out of retirement. Like,
maybe they make a deal with Putin for Fedotov.
It'd be a hell of a deal. I mean, I don't know what it would be sending, but like, it's bad. They are literally on their last leg for everything. Like, if there's injuries like they had last year, we will clearly be the worst team in the league because there's nothing. There's no depth at all behind them. It's if it's stabilization, you're sure, but like, you have to have some kind of. Like, this losing culture needs to go. It needs to go. And it's going to need – I like Tortorella, but it's going to need more than just him.
Yeah. Yep. So, instead of stabilization, they may as well just use transition. We're going to you could tell, I think, you know, as the dust settled a little bit, right? Because obviously everyone's first thought was to be angry. I was angry. You were angry last week. It was to be angry because aggressive retool – they did an aggressive retool. You know, so as the dust settles now, you know, we're kind of turning to, okay, stabilization. What is a stabilization year? And basically what it means to me is 2022, 2023 is, you know, we're going to be watching guys try to figure it out. We're going to see if they can make it in the NHL. You know, maybe we're going to be watching JVR's last couple games as a Flyer. Maybe Travis Sanheim's. There's Provorov going to be here. Konechny. Who is going to fit? Who is going to be able to play for John Tortorella in 2023-2024? That's what this season is about for me now, right? Like you have to change I have to change my expectations if I'm going to be able to watch the team next season. And, you know, since last week, my expectations are changed. You know, I'm just going to watch the Flyers because I'm a fan of the hockey team, you know, and that's it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you have to make sense of what went down. That's essentially what it is. Why they had to lie about it, I'll never understand. Why we were sold a bill of goods, I'll never understand. But if they'd just been like, hey, listen, this is what it is, this is what we're going to do, laid out some kind of plan that made some kind of sense, I could have got on board with that. Instead, they decided to enrage their entire fan base to the point where they're reaching out to the owner's daughter, former owner's daughter, excuse me, to like calm us down. Like, I'm not supposed to believe that's complete corporate jargon. And I don't know if I jumped the lead or anything here, but what exactly did she say again? And I forget her name.
Yeah, so I think she was talking to Anthony. Yeah, she was talking to Anthony on Twitter, and actually one of her tweets was mentioned earlier in the group chat. I think it was something in regards to Therrien. Right. Like, because,
yeah,
in regards to Therrien, it was something like, you know, anybody can complain about something, but not everybody will come up with solutions. And that's fine. Like, I think the general consensus anymore is, you know, Therrien's just disgruntled, really has anything positive to say and this and that. But even through his relentless, you know, negative rants about the franchise, a lot of what he says is true. It's just like, okay, man, give it a little bit of a rest. But it's a lot of what he says is accurate.
A lot of what he says is accurate. And I don't like the, oh, you don't offer any solutions. Well, Therrien doesn't get paid millions of dollars to make those solutions.
You guys can, Therrien.
He was a former defenseman who was in a broadcast guy who now speaks on a podcast. He's not a general manager.
Whatever the hell he wants.
Exactly. He's not a general manager who makes millions of dollars to figure it out and not who – Fletcher loves to tell us it was too hard. We couldn't figure it out. Like, that's the last thing we want to hear. If you told me that you legitimately tried or you offered this or whatever, like if you, or you did another smaller move, I could probably come around to it. But this whole, well, it was too hard. You know, I've heard that enough from him. And we've been sold a bag of bill of goods, unfortunately. And when I have to truly believe in my heart of hearts that somebody reached out to her to make this statement. And at first I didn't think that. First couple of things were kind of like, almost like the Hartnell response to Therrien. Oh, I can't believe you played for this team, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's like, all right, could it be too negative too often? Sure. I mean, I don't blame him. This team's a joke. It has been for quite a while now, but even still, there are times where it's just too much, like enough. Like, let's see what happens. I get it. But when she said one thing that really irked me and it made me realize that it was complete corporate jargon, I'm paraphrasing here, but it was something along the lines of, don't not go to games because of ownership. That'll only affect the players. They thrive on blah, 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 blah. And a part of that is true. I'm sure players thrive on the fans being there. But that was like a shout from ownership to like, don't not renew your season tickets. Don't not buy Santa sacks because the team is dog shit. Still go to the games. Like, spend your hard-earned money to watch us get trashed. It was like, all right, you lost me there.
Right.
I'm not buying this. Somebody got in your ear, in my opinion, because there is no reason to force myself to spend money and go to this game when the ownership and particularly the guy in charge running the show did literally nothing to make the team better than it was last year. You're just relying on health, 100% health. You didn't replace Giroux's production, and Ellis is the biggest question mark of all time. There's no backup goalie, which is going to affect Hart long term. We didn't do much to fix the defense. offensively, sure, you replace Yandel, I guess, at a $5 million price tag. But as far as defense is concerned, you're putting that all on the coach, I guess. But I'm supposed to buy in completely after 2 years of dog shit and a couple of years before that under the Hextall era and just blindly follow you because I'm a fan. I'll always be a fan. I do this podcast because I'm a fan. Anything you say won't make me more or less of a fan. The team is dog shit, and you need to fix you. I don't need to fix me. Fix you. So that whole comment lost me at still go to the games, still spend your own money, where I'm saying fix your shit first because we're an absolute joke, and I'm tired of talking about it week in and week out, year after year.
Yeah, it kind of came off as out of touch to me, right? And I think she had gotten more involved with the team this season. I think maybe the team or people within the organization, and I'm assuming here, I think they reached out to her to get her more involved. And this all happened after, you know, the team failed to wish Mr. Snyder a happy birthday kind of thing. I'm assuming, right? Because I had reached out to Lindy around that time. And she had mentioned something to the tune of getting more involved herself. And
what to remind them?
Yeah, I guess. And to me, she just sounded out of touch yesterday. Like this isn't something that just happened out of nowhere. And I'll speak to myself, and I'm sure a lot of listeners feel similar, but I've been feeling pushed away from this team for years. Right? Like they don't want me as a fan, right? For years, I felt like they were marketing, advertising to people who don't even like hockey, right? You know who I mean, Jack? Like, and those fans, they're not going to stick around when things get tough. The ones that they're advertising for, the gritties or the milkshakes or the hipsters or whatever. Hockey's cool. You should go to hockey games because they're fun. Those fans aren't going to be here when the team sucks. And I'm not going to say that I was hurt, but I was kind of like, you're really doing this the wrong way, right? Because who's going to be there year after year after year? People like you, Jack, people like me, people who are listening to this show, they're marketing to the wrong people, right? And I don't know if that sounds bad to say, but I was offended a little bit by it. I felt like they didn't need people like me as a fan. I felt like they were moving on from people like me. And maybe I'm taking that too personal, but I'm just being honest about how I felt. And so through the years, I mean, the whole Hextall thing didn't help. That was the kind of start of it, but that's hockey stuff. You know what I mean, Jack? That's hockey stuff. Sometimes that happens. You know, Hextall had a plan, stuck to his plan. Things didn't necessarily work out. They moved on. They made the playoffs 2 out of the 4 years, you know? Now this whole Chuck Fletcher thing, hey, he's having a hard time putting together a roster, put the team into cap hell. That's hockey stuff. The organization stuff, it's just sad. It's to the point where I'm not even angry. Like I was angry last year. I was angry the year before. This year, I'm just kind of like, geez, man, can this even get better? Do they have the people in the organization that can fix this? Not talking about the roster, the Philadelphia Flyers franchise. Can they come back? Because they're a laughingstock. They're not the Flyers that we grew up with, Jack. You know what I mean? And it's hard for me to truly hope that they succeed because I don't like what they are right now, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure, I would like them to build a roster, and I would like to enjoy watching games. But I don't necessarily like the Flyers franchise. I like some of the people within the organization. So don't get me wrong there. There are some great people in the organization. But the people who are running things at the top, not thrilled with right now.
And that's what irks me the most. And the fact that somebody who came from the Snyder bloodline is saying that, I'm almost praying that it's David Scott or somebody else with their hand puppeting this person, because like, you know, that the difference between this corporate organization and what they're doing, what they're changing this team into, and what my nightmare as a 11-year-old when I knew Snyder was going to pass on one day could happen versus today, what we're seeing. And that Valerie, whatever the hell, who came from the Washington Nationals from all teams, you know, Flyers fans are going to have to get used to it. That's a quote. I'm not exactly sure what that's in reference to, but it can't be good. It's obviously a change from what we're used to. What are we supposed to get used to? Losing all the time? Not being in touch with the players or team? You make a good point about Hextall. Yeah, he was different. He was off. But at least it was still, in a way, some kind of Flyers hockey where they were in some way trying to win. Whatever they're pushing now is very just show up because it's a fun event. It's an event. It's an experience. It's not a lifestyle like it is with us, where if I don't see a cup before I die, you know, like things are going to be bad.
It's starting to look that way, right? Like I had that real thought the other
very
day.
Very angry old man, you know, like, you know, with a vehicle. You know, I'm just saying, like, it's bad. And for them to talk to us, and it's almost like talking down to us, like they're questioning my fanhood. That quote, question my fanhood. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like all the shit I've put up with for almost a decade now, and you're right. in our darkest times. Always stand by us. I'm not going anywhere. I'm here, but I'm not. I'm still going to criticize you for being dumb and stupid. Like I'm not. I didn't go vote for another team and buy their jerseys. No, I'm the asshole still buying jerseys, still buying memorabilia, and still talking about this team while you collect money or whatever's left of it and sit on your ivory tower and just say, oh no, please keep coming, please do this. And it irked me to my core because it's not right. That's not the way things are done. This same organization, Comcast, has treated the players, the alumni, the people who work for the team like dog shit. Come on, it's all there. They had a trainer, or correct me if I'm wrong, whoever passed away was like one of the first trainers or equipment managers or something for the team. They got the wrong name, the wrong image. It's not even the right guy. You know, Paul Hogram and Rick Tocchet inducted to the Flyers Hall of Fame. They barely let anybody know. They're talking to an empty stadium as they give them their rings and whatnot. Like, that's embarrassing. Yeah, and not to mention the biggest thing of all are the two, and their names slipped my mind, so Jim, please help me out here. The two trainers who, with the Zamboni incident with the gases and whatnot or whatever caused them to have cancer. And then they have the balls not only to like just take care of them or say that we're looking into this, they say what they said had no merit. How disrespectful. Like, don't go that far. Like, at least investigate it first. But we understand their concerns. They're part of the family. You know, we're going to take care of them. We're going to look into this. We're going to fix this. Instead, they say whatever they said has no merit. That is so disrespectful. And it just infuriates you. Like they even the little things off the ice, they can't get right. But they want us to keep spending our money as they have the dog shit product. They can't do anything right off the ice. But I'm going to blindly, like an idiot, spend my money and spend this and just support whatever they're putting out there. Why?
I think an important little message for Miss Camillo is Flyers fans aren't going anywhere. Like, we're here.
Move on.
Like, right. If anything is going to change, it's going to be the person trying to change the fan base and
get used
to
it.
It's unfortunate if you're in a position such as hers. It's, you know, how can I make my most loyal part of the fan base happy? Right now they're losing that.
I look at, she came from the Washington Nationals. Okay, they were a team that moved from the Montreal Expos, moved to Washington. Okay, Philadelphia Flyers have been here since 1967. Okay, we are deep-rooted, hardcore fans. You're not changing us. Do whatever you want with the Washington Nationals who've been around. I think their first year was, 2000 and, like,
well, four, here's the thing five. With the city like D.C. too, though, is not there aren't many people from D.C., like it's kind of like Los Angeles or whatever. Like a lot of people are implanted into DC. Like they don't grow up Nationals fans or whatever the hell teams they have there. So down there, do whatever the hell you want. Make ball games fun for these fans who don't give a shit if the Nationals win or lose. Does that make sense? In Philadelphia, we're from here. We love our sports. The Flyers have a cult following. They're a cult sport. It's a niche sport. If you're a fan of the Flyers, I mean, let's be honest. They're the fourth, you know, most popular team in the city. Maybe arguably fifth with the Union coming up. The Flyers have a cult following fan base. If you choose to do what you're doing and catering to people who don't love the sport, you're going to lose that cult following. And that's what's happening now. All right. I feel kind of gross sometimes when I talk about the Flyers because I don't like what they are right now. I don't like what they're becoming. And I don't know. I don't want to keep going on that. I don't want to keep ramming home that point. But
I mean, if you're going to ram it home and be done with it, that was a great way to do it because you're 100% right. 10 years ago, Gaudreau would already be here. He would have been here before we ever hit free agency, maybe even the draft. And Kachuk be on the way. Am I wrong? Am I really wrong? Like we would have gone all out to bring these guys in. We'd have been all out to fix whatever was wrong. Now we are okay with just status quo, lying to the fan base, telling them the Flyers fans got to get used to it. Like we're going to go anywhere. They're going to gain new fans who are going to show up just to because it's a good time. That ain't happening. We're going to sit there outside of the stadium with our bags and demand change. So they need to change, not us. And I know you don't want to drive it home because you did a good job, but it's so infuriating that they think they can change us and they can say things and they can bring outside names in. Oh, her last name is Schneider. Let's bring her in, have her say something, and she'll change us. She'll make us realize, yeah, she's right. We need to always be a fan of this team when they're in their darkest hour and it's always darkest before the dawn. And bullshit. Fix your shit. We see how other teams operate. We watch the rest of the league. We're not dumb. Like, we see what's going on here. We're being lied to. It might have worked if they weren't lying to us. But, like, we see what's going on here. And you need to fix you. We're just fine to figure it out.
Yep. Well said. All right. Having said that, we're about an hour and almost 5 minutes into the episode. So why don't we put a bow on this one, huh? Next week, we will be joined by the Flyers' latest free agent acquisition, Mr. Nicholas DeLaurier. We'll be hanging out courtesy of Joe Seville for the Flyers. So thanks to Joe for getting Nick for us. Make sure you hang out. It's going to be next Monday, 8 p.m., only on YouTube. So make sure you guys head over to our YouTube now, Flyers HW, and subscribe. You get alerts for, I think it's like a 5-minute or 10-minute alert before the episode to let you know that we're going to be doing it. You're not going to want to miss this one. It'll be fun. Really excited to hang out with Nick for however long it is next week. Kyle's coming back next week. So we're looking forward to that as well. His hiatus is officially over. So he'll be hanging out with us as well as Nick. And yeah, that's going to do it for the episode. Thank you for hanging out as always. And the next time you catch us, as I mentioned, will be Monday. So make sure you drink your green stuff, take your vitamins, and stay cool. If you have a pool or know somebody that has a pool, get in that pool. It's friggin' hot out. Everybody enjoy the rest of your night.
If you see your local mailman, give him a bottle of water. Give him water.
For real, though.
Gatorade, water, Powerade, it works.